Hello and welcome to Journey of Monkey King with myself, Griva, my friend MJ.
Yo!
So, this week might be a bit, I don't know, lower energy, weirder energy.
Can we get weirder? Of course we can get weirder! Yay!
I got a vaccination yesterday and feeling a bit tired from it, a bit worn out from it. And MJ hasn't had a cigarette in a few days. Do you mind me saying that?
No, it's fine. Everyone needs to acknowledge that and how well I'm doing and tell me that I'm a brave and special boy.
Yeah, that's
otherwise pretty... I will run like immediately to Centra and just sit down and smoke an entire packet.
No, that's impressive. Well done.
Thank you. I hate everything. But yeah, I like that you're vaccinated though.
Yeah, I do too. Like, well, I'm half vaccinated. I still have to go back in 4 weeks for the second one.
Yeah, well, I mean, once you get those antibodies in you, they do a number on you. But
at least it's not like in the UK where they just decided, fuck it, we'll just vaccinate. We'll just give everyone one and we'll, you know, you can have the second one in like a few months maybe.
We'll see what happens. But, I mean, that was the same here with AstraZeneca.
Yeah.
Because my mother was fucking furious. The over 60s over here, because the clot risks, they were the ones that got given AstraZeneca. And it was originally like 12 weeks between doses. And one dose is only like 33% effective against super hyper duper mega COVID or whatever we have now.
Yeah, actually let's not turn this into another fucking COVID podcast.
Yeah, I was only just bitching to my friends this afternoon when we did a practice comedy gig, because we all suck at the minute and we can't do it in front of real people.
You're out of practice.
We boiled the shame off. And I was saying one of my pet peeves is like a really long podcast where the hosts spend like 40 minutes talking about their weekend or the weather or whatever, and then you're halfway through your train journey before they get to the meat of the thing. So this has been what, like 3.5 minutes of bitching? I think we're doing okay.
I listened to one podcast like that, but it's that's the part, you know, I listen for. It's
is it a podcast that rhymes with Smash Future?
No, though I do listen to Alice Caldwell Kelly's other podcast. I do listen to There's Your Problem, but I was actually talking about something much... I was actually just talking about Rock, Paper, Shotgun's electronic wireless show, which is on paper a podcast about computer games.
Oh, cool.
And in actuality is... three people chatting about aquariums and just any old random shit. One of them
aquariums
is really into
delightful.
Yeah, one of them is really into fish. Nate Crowley is really into fish, and he just has like loads of different aquarium tanks.
A Troy McClure kind of way, or
I don't think so.
Okay.
He has a daughter who, as I understand, is fully human.
Well, that's all we can hope for our children, really, isn't it? Apparently fully human. Sorry, Mom. Anyway, murder monkey. Hyper murder monkeys.
Let's do a fucking podcast, I
suppose. Let's do a goddamn podcast. We're potting this cast so hard.
Oh, God. How much of this should I edit out? All of it? Let's just start from here. Welcome to Journey of the Monkey King. We're on chapter 37. If you recall, at the end of the last chapter, Tripitaka was just reviewing some old scriptures before going to bed. And he reads...
He's a nerd.
Yeah. As if you aren't.
I literally, in the before time, had a show called The Nerd Herd. It's not nerd derogatory, it's nerd affectionate.
but so he reads the water litany of King Liang and the true sutra of the peacock for a while before packing up and getting ready to go to bed. But he hears a weird moan from a strong gust of wind outside, and he tries to shade his lamp with his sleeve to stop it blowing out. But he's suddenly overcome by tiredness and falls asleep with his head resting against the desk. And in his dream, he hears a voice calling out to him. And he looks up and sees a man standing outside the door, dressed like a king, but soaking wet from head to toe. And he introduces himself as
the... on the moaning gust of... Wait, no, I'm not going there.
Okay.
I was like, wait, had you never, like, as someone from rural Ireland, had you never heard, you know, she'd get up on a gust of wind to describe a particularly promiscuous
I know, person? Actually, I'm not familiar with that one, sorry.
Oh yeah, but it was the moaning gust of wind and then the soaking wet king, and I was like,
yeah.
But I thought there was something there wasn't, anyway.
Sorry. But yeah, he introduces himself as the king of the Black Rooster Kingdom, and he tells Tripitaka a story. 5 years ago, there was a severe drought that led to a terrible famine in the kingdom, and he emptied every warehouse to feed the people and exhausted the whole treasury to the point of stopping the salaries of all his officials. He even tried to... you know, to take on a more pious lifestyle to appease heaven. He started ritually cleansing. He took up veganism and abstinence, and he was constantly praying. But none of that fucking worked. And the drought persisted. And 3 years later, the rivers and wells had pretty much run dry.
Well, I guess beef farming is agriculture, it's like water intensive, so it could have, but you know, too little too late, I guess.
I mean, if you're at the point where the rivers have run dry, I think you're probably a bit late to be trying to change your farming methods. Yeah,
there's a lesson in this for everyone. Yeah. Sorry.
And so when the kingdom seemed to be on the verge of collapse, a Taoist appeared from the Zhongnan Mountain who was able to summon wind and rain and transform stone into gold. And
Andy.
So they asked him to summon 3 inches of rain to make up for the drought. And he was so generous, he threw in an extra 2 inches. You want to make a joke?
I know there's one there, but I can't find it. I'm very sorry. So five whole inches.
Actually, wait.
Five whole inches, and everything will be soaking wet. I don't know. I can't do this. I'm just gonna be quiet. I'm gonna.
Are you okay?
Yes.
Actually, I want to double check something because I want to double check I didn't mistype something in my notes. Give me 2 seconds.
Cool.
Yeah, sorry. So I said 3 inches. Sorry, they asked for 3 feet of rain, and he asked, and he threw in an extra 2 inches.
I thought that 3 inches wasn't gonna be a lot to get the job done.
Sorry. Yeah. This is.
I mean, like. When the rivers have run completely dry,
I can't even blame the vaccination tiredness for that because I wrote these notes before I got vaccinated.
Maybe it's like that wine in Terry Pratchett where it works backwards and then you're like hung under.
Oh,
like the grapes are from the future or some shit. I don't know. Pfizer will fuck you up, but it's very worth getting and taking.
Please get vaccinated, yes. But
please get vaccinated. I have just quit smoking. Do not make it difficult for me to breathe again. It's not fair. Get your vaccine.
But I'm no expert on weather or anything really, but
you know a lot about measurements.
Well, that's the thing. It occurs to me that having 3 feet of rain suddenly after like a several year long drought,
that could cause some problems.
That seems like it would be disastrous and not what you want at all. Like, I think that would just resort to like flooding and landslides and like all of your topsoil being swept away.
Yeah, actually, particularly if the ground is like baked dry. I don't know. Does it have to be all at once, or can they have like a magic rain installment plan?
I guess it doesn't actually say it was all at once.
Anyway, is there a massive flood?
Oh no, wait, sorry. Actually, sorry. It says as he struck aloud his ritual placard, torrential rain came down in a moment. So yeah, it was just one huge big storm.
Ah, that's such a bad idea, but I guess better than nothing.
I mean, I guess if they at least if they had, you know, enough jars and buckets out, fewer people are gonna die of dehydration.
Do they acknowledge the topsoil thing? Because like, for narrative convenience, I would say no, but also this is just
he made everything better. Everything was fine after this. There was no negative consequence to this massive storm.
Okay.
And then he made them a load of gold to refill the treasury. It was grand. It was all perfect.
Brilliant. Sound man.
Yeah. And because of that, the Taoist became immediately a very close friend of the king. He says, we became so... Oh, sorry. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He uses the royal we, actually, in this translation, which is interesting. I don't know if Anthony Yu is translating a particular mode of speech there from the original Chinese that's represented by that. But the king uses the royal we constantly throughout this chapter.
I have formed a weird parasocial relationship with Anthony Yu. I just kind of hope he's okay.
He's dead.
He seems like a nice... Oh. This hasn't been a good day.
Sorry. Yeah, he died. I think he died relatively recently.
Oh.
By which I mean like in the last 10 years or so. Okay. He died in 2015. He was 76.
I mean, that's a good age. Rest in peace, Anto.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm sorry you had to do all that work on puns. I assure you it was worth it, because we can now do a podcast. That's what he wanted, right? I guess that's what he wanted.
I mean, he died in 2015. He did live to see a world with podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, history doesn't relate his opinion on them, but okay. That's fine.
Anyway, the king says, we became so intimate with him that we shared our food and rest together for 2 years when it was time for spring again. As flowers bloomed seductively on the apricot and peach trees, every household in the kingdom was going out to enjoy the lovely scenery. At the time when our officials retired to their residence and our consorts to their chambers, we walked hand in hand with the Taoist into the imperial garden.
That's very sweet.
Yeah. I want to kind of say it's kind of, there's a lot of room in there to make jokes about them like being gay and this like accidentally reading as that.
I think it's very deliberate, and B,
it could
quite
be
cute.
It could be.
Let them have their weird, I don't know. The
author could be trying to imply a relationship there, but I will also say that like reading this kind of novel from a different society than one in the past, it's important to remember how like a homophobic society, and by that I mean our society, not Ming China, like makes men afraid to have like intimate friendships and have that kind of any kind of like social intimacy between men in literature as gay. That's
well,
actually,
I say they're gay and good for them.
That's actually a huge pity.
Yeah, but they're gay and good for them.
Like that, yeah.
I suppose, like,
it's a complicated thing. Where I think it can be nice to kind of look at the work and say like, no, they these characters can be gay. That's fine. But it could have been written, but it could have been written with that intent by the author. I have no idea. But it's also important to remember that this could also have just been written as this is just what a close male friendship is like, and that's fine.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. But Anthony Yu's dead and this brings me joy. So but yeah, I suppose there's something nice about it as well, because if you are a king, and you know, there's if you want to, you know, get it on somewhere outside someone's royal family and not have there be a massive power differential, somebody who can literally make gold out of nothing, I mean, that's got to put them on a pretty, you know what I'm trying to say, I don't know, they may or may not have been gay. Let's move on.
Okay. Anyway, he continues, when we came near our well with octagonal marble walls, he threw something in it that emitted myriad shafts of golden light and tricked us into approaching the side of the well to see what sort of treasure was in it. He moved to treachery all at once. He pushed us into the well, which he then covered with a slab of stone. He sealed off the entire well with mud and dirt, and he even transplanted a plantain tree on it. Alas, pity us, we've been dead now for 3 years. A ghost who lost his life in the well, whose wrong has yet to be avenged.
Is this the first time we've seen a ghost?
There was the dragon who the Tripitaka's official executed appeared as a ghost as well, I think. As well as, you know, all the whole thing of Tripitaka, or of Taizong going to hell himself.
Yeah, but I mean, that's like you're going into the house of the dead. At that point, you know, you go into the house of the dead, you're going to meet the dead.
I forgot to do a warning as well that, like, yeah, it's too late now, but this episode is, like, you know, more mundane forms of murder than we're used to.
No more child murder. We're done with child murder.
We are done with child murder.
We're done with child murder. Cool. Yeah. One in the gay column, and now I guess gay murder column, is it's just an interesting choice of language, just the, you know, the blossom blooming seductively on the apricot.
Yeah.
Although that could have been, you know, just a seduction by affection to get him into the well for reasons.
Yeah, we'll get to that, yeah.
Reasons that will become clear.
Yes. So Tripitaka realizes that he's been talking to a ghost, and he's very scared by this. But he does see a hole in this story, which is there's another hole in the story, which is that the timelines don't add up, because he said like this started 5 years ago, and then he skips like 3 years, and then 2 years, and then 3 years again. So it actually should have started 8 years ago. But Tripitaka points out another hole in the story, which is, if he's been dead for 3 years, why have they not gone looking for and found his body?
Maybe he just wasn't very well liked.
No, the Taoists could shapeshift, and he has been ruling in the king's place for the last 3 years.
If I had he's got the power to make gold. You know, that's serious power. I don't, like, is looking for political power after that even necessary? I don't know. Well, whatever.
Maybe he wants the respect. You know, he doesn't want to be seen as new money.
I guess. Well, it's the newest money.
Mm. Mm. So Tripitaka then asks him, you know, why hasn't he just lodged a complaint with King Yama in the underworld then?
love how that works.
Is it? And it's he just says it really, he's just like really flatly. He's like, well, if all this happened, why didn't you just fucking sue him? Why didn't you just sue the guy who murdered you? And the reason is the Taoist is also very well connected. He's friends with loads of different gods, including the Ten Kings of Hell, and a god from the Time Mountain named Equal to Heaven, which is apparently like a outside of this novel, a
this title, is the Time Mountain.
Yeah, a title of a god who lives in the Time Mountain, which, you know, the Great Sage Equal to Heaven title may have been inspired over or named after that, which is interesting that the author throws it into the novel itself as well, but it's just mentioned in passing.
The Flower Fruit Mountain wasn't quite grand enough for Wukong.
No, it is. It's not Wukong. It is a separate deity.
The novel. I know. Okay. But like he could have just chosen a Flower Fruit Mountain relation. No, never mind.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah,
he wanted a bigger title than Lord of the Flower Fruit Mountain or whatever.
Yeah, I'm sure the Flower Fruit Mountain is very nice.
I'm sure it has loads of flowers and loads of fruit, or at least, well, it did.
The flowering fruit.
It did, but then it all got burned down. Actually,
the unpleasantness.
Yeah, he did tell them to replant, so maybe that's going well. It's probably been a year or two since that happened at this point in the novel.
They're beating their swords into plowshares.
We can only hope. So Tripitaka asks him why he's here then. And it turns out actually one of Tripitaka's guardian deities actually brought him here. The night patrol god summoned the king on a gust of wind and told him to ask Tripitaka for help. Specifically, he mentioned someone called the Great Sage Equal to Heaven. Get him to do it. Tripitaka says, oh yeah, my disciple's not much good at anything else, but he can catch demons. It's the one thing he's good at.
He could also just complain to hell. I am pretty sure they would not be happy to see him back.
True, though I think Wukong would prefer just to have a fight.
I just want to see the return of Sun Wukaren.
So, Tripitaka thinks it might be a bit difficult in this case, though, because if everyone in the palace is fooled and thinks he's the real king, then they can't just run. They can't just rush in and publicly oppose the king. You know, wouldn't go well. So the ghost says that his son might be an ally. The Taoist has kept him around, but he's on a short leash and he's forbidden to see his mother. The Taoist is worried that if the son and the mother meet, they might talk and realize something's up. So Tripitaka remarks how like similar this is to what happened to his parents back in chapter 9. He asks how he could meet with the son when he's guarded so closely. I find it interesting as well that Tripitaka like explicitly remarks that that's similar to his childhood.
Is this foreshadowing?
No, well, not really, but I just find it interesting because according to the introduction to this translation, that chapter didn't appear in the oldest versions of the novel. So I'm curious, did this line exist in the versions where that chapter doesn't, and someone filled in a chapter based on Tripitaka, like saying, oh yeah, this is just like what happened when I was a baby.
This could be part fan fiction.
Yeah, and there was another poem elsewhere in the novel where he kind of vaguely talks about it as well, but it's interesting that there's multiple references to this event later in the novel when it apparently that chapter wasn't in the oldest edition that's known.
Ah, that is a thorough editing.
Yeah, so I don't know. These remarks could have been added in with that chapter, or I don't know. It's interesting, and I'm not a historian of this novel. I'm sure there's more you could read up on it. But anyway, back to the plot. Tomorrow, the prince is going out on a hunting trip with a party of 3,000 men and horses, and it's a chance to get him away from the eyes of the Taoist and talk to him. And the king takes out a white jade token inlaid with gold. It's one of a kind. It's a symbol of the throne. And he had it with him when he was thrown in the well. And that the fact that he has it and the Taoist doesn't should be proof that something is up. And the king says goodbye and that he's going to ask the Night Patrol God to blow him back to the palace on another gust of wind so he can also speak to the queen in her dreams. So Tripitaka steps forward to give the king a send-off, but he trips and falls and he wakes up with a start. And he wakes up his disciples and he starts to tell them about his dream. And Wukong thinks it's just a dream. He says dreams come from restless thoughts. Tripitaka is only dreaming because he's worried about monsters on the road and he's homesick. Wukong is single-minded. He only thinks about the pilgrimage and his goals, and he never dreams ever. Which A, he's definitely not single-minded, and B,
he's so easily distracted.
It's a very weird assertion to be like, you're foolish, you dreaming about things. I'm very intelligent. I've never dreamed in my life. I don't know. Maybe there might actually be that might actually be part of now that I make a joke about it, I'm immediately backtracking on it because I wonder, is that kind of a reflection of like Buddhist principles of like meditation and having a still mind and being without thought, actually? I don't know, as if I know anything about Buddhism.
Enlightenment, dreams, lucidity, and false awakening.
To Google.
We're so good and respectful. I know there's a sort of perception that life is not more than a dream. And there's a big sort of concept of awakening. But yeah. I'm not sure. Maybe people can correct us on it.
Yeah, let's just carry on.
Yeah.
But Tripitaka tells them the king's story from the dream, and they go out and they go outside, and the jade token is there on the ground. So proving that it wasn't just a dream after all.
Dun dun dun.
So Wukong comes up with a plan. He turns one of his hairs into a gold-plated, red lacquered box, and he puts the king's token inside it. And he tells Tripitaka that tomorrow he should put on his fancy brocaded cassock, take the box with him, and go out to the main hall of the monastery and just recite sutras for the day. Wukong is going to lure the prince's hunting party to the monastery, and then he's going to shrink down to 2 inches tall and hide inside the box. When the prince enters the monastery, ignore him. Don't pay him any respect or attention. This is going to piss him off because he's a royal little shit. Yeah,
and that's just how they work.
Yeah, he'll order you seized or beaten up or executed or something like that. And Tripitaka objects at this point in the plan. And Wukong tells him not to worry. He'll be there to protect him. Just tell the prince that you're going on a pilgrimage. You're coming from China, and you're here to present 3 magical treasures to the Buddha. You have the cassock as the first treasure, and the second treasure is a thing you have in the box that knows everything that has happened or will happen in the past 500 years, the future 500 years, and the present 500 years. and then let Wukong jump out of the box and tell him the story about his father. And if he doesn't believe the story at that point, we'll show him the Jade Token as the third treasure. And hopefully he actually recognizes it. He might be too young. We don't actually know what age he is.
That is not the worst plan.
It's a bit over elaborate, but...
You know, we've seen worse from these people.
So, in the morning, Wukong heads out towards the city. He sees that it's shrouded in eerie black mists and demonic winds due to being usurped. And he sees the hunting party leaving the city, and he turns into a small white rabbit and runs directly in front of the prince's horse and makes himself an easy target. The prince loses an arrow at him, and he catches the arrow, but pretends to be hit by it and runs off, leaving a few feathers from a trail behind. And he leads them all the way to the monastery, where he sticks the arrow in the doorpost and runs inside, jumps into the box that Tripitak is holding as they planned. So when the prince rides up to the monastery, he sees the arrow stuck in the doorpost, and he thinks that that wasn't a normal rabbit. It must have been some kind of spirit that led him here, and he takes it as a sign that he should visit the monastery. Exactly as planned, when he goes in, Tripitak ignores him while all the other monks bow to him, and he gets pissy about it, and he orders Tripitaka seized in a fit of rage.
Sun Wukong does know royals and their egos.
Takes one to know one.
Yep.
When the men try to approach him, Wukong cites a spell that sends a silent message to the various guardians of the fate, the six gods of darkness, the six gods of light, to protect Tripitaka, and they put up an invisible wall between the prince's men and Tripitaka, stopping them from approaching him. And Tripitaka goes through his lines as planned. He tells the prince about the magic treasure in his box which he calls the king-making thing that has
the
knowledge
king-making thing. Yeah. it's very Buffy speak.
Yeah, it is a bit. And it has all the knowledge of the past and future. And he makes some kind of implication about righting a wrong done to the prince's father. And so when he's presented with the king making thing, the prince asks him what sort of divination he uses. Does he read tortoise shells? Does he throw stalks of plants? Is it from books or how is it? And Wukong says, I don't need to use divination. I fucking already know everything.
So part of Wukong is definitely rubbing off on him.
Oh no, this is Wukong saying it. He's transformed into a he's oh, yeah. He's shrunk course. He's shrunk down in and he's hidden inside the box and he's saying this.
Oh, okay. Not Tripitaka.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he starts telling the prince the story of the drought that affected his kingdom and how it was saved by the Taoist. And the prince already knows all this, of course. And then he says, oh yeah, 3 years ago when that Taoist was walking with my father in the garden, he suddenly stole his father's white jade token and disappears in a gust of wind. And no one has seen the Taoist since then. And the king has barred anyone from entering that garden for the last 3 years because he's been sulking about it. So we get to hear the Taoist cover story here for what happened. And Wukong starts laughing at him, but he says they have to be alone for what he's about to tell him. And the prince agrees and sends his men away. And Wukong tells the prince that his father was killed by the Taoist and he's actually an imposter, and he shows him the token. So the prince reaches the obvious conclusion, which is that Tripitaka is actually the Taoist in disguise, and that's why he has the token, and just orders him seized again.
Oh, of course.
Tripitaka calls Wukong a banhorse plague, and says he has a knack for getting Tripitaka into trouble. I like to think that Tripitaka doesn't have a clue what that title actually means and has just heard.
He just knows it annoys him.
He's just heard Zhu Baji calling Wukong that enough times to know it's something bad that Wukong hates. So Wukong decides to drop the pretense. He changes back to his normal form and he tells the full story to the prince about Tripitaka's dream and why they set up all this trick. The prince actually finds this kind of convincing. He says that sounds maybe 30% true.
Smart guy.
And I'm not joking. The translation actually says that's like 30%.
That sounds maybe 30%.
Yeah, it uses the words 30%.
Anthony Yu, rest in peace.
And so he says he agrees to leave the hunting party here, go back to the city on his own, sneak into the palace by the back gate and find his mother and talk to her for the first time in 3 years about her husband and does she think he has changed. And with that plan ready to go, or with that plan settled, we are left on a cliffhanger.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, interesting. I do feel like if you've got a magic box that... Yeah, it is convoluted, but also it's better than, as you said, 90% of the plans they've had, so... It may be a 30% improvement. Who knows?
Yeah. I don't have anything else. And I have even less energy than normal for attempting a decent sign off.
Go rest. Everybody get vaccinated.
Yes. Please. And
keep wearing your fucking mask on public transport. I swear to God, I came back from a swim last night. I don't know what kind of fucking rat-licking convention there was.
Like even if you're vaccinated, vaccines aren't 100% effective. So
you can still spread this shit. Yeah. Wear a damn mask.
Like,
I will set you on fire.
Please, please.
I don't care where you are. I will find you and set you on fire.
That's our guarantee. that's the journey of the fucking king guarantee.
Cool. See ya.